Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back. Hey, before we dive into things, I'm going to talk through some assignments for the remainder of the semester. So I mentioned in the first few classes this tiny box challenge, which is typically a part of this course. We're working groups to design a optimized converter. We're going to try to fit at least some of this into the course still under the current paradigm. So I'll go through and talk about what this challenge is, and then I'll talk about how we're going to modify it for the current social distancing situation. So this is based on something that was called the Google Little Box Challenge that happened 6 years ago. We participated in. Google came out and said they want to have this worldwide challenge to design the smallest and most power dense single phase inverter. So we kind of adapted some of the structure of that into this course and call it the tiny box challenge. Google's was a 2 kilowatt inverter. Here I changed the specifications a little bit every year, but they're kind of generally in this ballpark. We're working with low enough voltages that there's no shock hazard, so we can use some of the educational labs as needed, and low enough powers that it's not such an undertaking and there's no real heat sinking needed. Okay, so this semester, what I'm putting forward for this challenge is to design a 48 to 12 volt converter, and it needs to correspond to the specifications here. So 48 volts at the input, 12 volt plus or minus 0.1 volt. This 0.1 is not necessarily ripple, that's in the next specification, but the 0.1 is just, we're not going to design a controller around this and just operate an open loop in steady state, so you don't have to tune your modulation waveform so perfectly. You've got some little margin of error there. If you're running at 11.9 volts, that's fine, that's 12 for all intents and purposes, don't worry about it. Okay. Output ripple voltage less than 1% of the 12 volts. That's some constraint on switching frequency and passives and how you go about designing it. For efficiency, we use the Tennessee Power Electronics method of evaluating efficiency. This is similar to what some of the California Energy Commission efficiency, or CEC efficiency. That's down here at the bottom. It's a weighted sum of efficiencies at different powers. It's kind of mostly the efficiency when you're running at maximum power, but it takes into account at 75% power, 50% power, and 25% power a little bit as well. It requires some sort of nice efficiency curve, not just a single point. No load power loss, meaning when the thing is operating, has an output voltage in this range, but zero output power, should have less than 2 watts of loss. All of the efficiency and losses here are talking about power stage efficiency, so things that come from auxiliary supplies like gate driver supplies aren't included. And then it needs to be smaller than 3.6 cubic inches, which requires a power density greater than 10 watts per cubic inch. Okay. And then the idea of the competition is need to satisfy all 7 of these items. And then among the ones that do, the highest power density is the winner of the competition. So we want to design it as small as possible while still meeting all these specifications. Okay. Example applications of such a converter, things that we've talked about before, this introductory example where we're going between a 48 and 12 volt bus in an electric vehicle, this mild hybrid type architecture. And then also in things like data centers and telecom, 48 is standard in telecom centers, increasingly common in data centers as an intermediate bus, and then 12 is a standard voltage on a motherboard, so high voltage actually on the motherboard. So converters going between these voltages could be used in these types of applications. For the most part, would be higher power level, but we want this to be something that's a little bit more simple to prototype. Okay. In terms of optimizing that power density, minimizing the size. For experimental prototypes, typically consider volume as the rectangle that encloses all of the main power stage components. And we'll talk about revisions, but if you go through with prototyping, it means you can have things like, you know, headers or test points or connections outside of that volume if they're things that are just there to make your life easier for actually building and testing this thing. Just the actual main passive components, switching devices, gate drivers have to be in that volume. And so we'll ask that as you design a PCB, put kind of a rectangle around what is the actual converter, and then can make your PCB larger with some other connectors and things to make your life easier. This is not posted on the website yet, but will be just after lecture, all the computation details and some additional specifications and documents. And there is no control involved, no regulation involved at all. Just needs to go to a steady state operating point at, you know, these four different power levels to be able to get a measurement. Okay. So the deliverables for this competition are always kind of three things: a written design comparison, three topologies, and I put that as being due in a couple of weeks. I'll talk a little bit more about that next. Then a PCB layout of your selected topology and actual full design of it. And then a testing report of, after we've actually fabricated that PCB, soldered it together and tested it, how did it perform relative to these specifications? So we're in the midst of a pandemic, in case you weren't aware. Traditionally, the way this has gone is the first deliverable, this design comparison report, everybody does individually. But then PCB layouts, soldering, and testing, we do in groups of two to three. And traditionally, then we have a written final exam. So what I'm proposing for this semester, and open to feedback, is that, well, we can't really prototype in groups of two to three. There's no way to maintain social distancing there. So we would have to do, you build and test it on your own. That's a lot of work. So supposing you can choose whether you want to actually build and test this thing or take the written final exam, your final exam grade will be just whatever one you choose. Okay. Then would be is if you choose to just take the written final exam, you'd still be expected to do this design comparison report. Here you're going to select three different topologies and go through a base paper design and say which one you think is going to be the best option for these specifications. And then I'd ask that you do a partial PCB layout. You don't need to actually finish and route everything up, but I want you to put things together and see what your volume would have been. Okay. You don't need to wire everything together and have all your trace routing. But you need to put your main components on there and show, okay, here's what my footprint would have been for this design. And if you want to stop there, then you'll take the written final exam the week of final exams, and you won't do anything here. If you want to continue and actually prototype this, then you'll need to complete that PCB layout, design everything. We'll order it when you get it back. You'll be able to test it during finals week and give a report of the testing results. That report doesn't require much writing. It's mostly just some O-scope captures and some measurements in a table. So how do people feel about that?
Dr. Castanet?
Yes. No.
Out of curiosity, when it comes down to either doing the tiny box project or the final exam, would it be possible to plan to like potentially do both and whatever grade you get like higher on, I suppose, like use that as your like final grade?
No.
Okay, so it's more of like a planned out beforehand, like I'm choosing this or this.
I think you can go up until when the PCB is due before you make your final decision. But if we're going to order and pay for the PCB and components, I want you to carry through and actually test it. And
yeah, gotcha. Sorry, I misunderstood you when you were speaking on the other side. You made it seem like we were supposed to do both. My bad.
Okay. No, so you have the option. You get to choose, but I do want you to make that decision before we actually pay for the PCB so that we're not buying one for everybody and then everybody says they don't feel like doing it, waste all that.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Jared, were you about to say something? Okay. It is going to be a fair amount of work to individually have to lay out the PCB, solder it together, and test it. The hope with this is that's more enjoyable work, even generally when it, outside of the pandemic, prototyping, hope is that that's something you enjoy doing and also is something that you can learn from and can kind of leverage towards doing a design you're interested in. So this, you won't be, I mean, you'll be certainly graded on effort and correctness of your analysis, but you don't necessarily need to pick a topology that you're not interested in working with or a design that you're not interested in working with. Tell me, in my research, I'm building a dual active bridge, and based on my analysis, the dual active bridge is best, but I'd really rather do some three-level resonant converter. It's a reasonable design. I'm fine with that. It doesn't have to be constrained by being the best topology according to your analysis. It can be something that you're just interested in getting experience building and testing. So hopefully that's just an opportunity to get something you'd like to do paid for by the university.
Out of curiosity, how long would it take, assuming we had the date for the PCB layout, the main part, not the routing, is due like the 13th?
Mm.
How long would it take for us to order it? How long could we expect to actually?
If everything is in and ready, we'll order from a 5-day turn order, which means it's going to take them 5 days to manufacture it and then another day or so to ship it. So it should be back in a week nominally. And then 12-9 is just, it's the last day of finals week. So you'll have until the end of that. That will be encompassing time after lectures are over. And so there'll be some time to work on it during finals week, which you can weigh into your decision whether or not you want to be coming in and building and testing during finals week. Otherwise, the final exam will be a written 1-week exam, which will be from 12-3 to 12-9, December 3rd to 9th, whenever. It'll be just assigned at the beginning of exam week and due at the end of exam week.
Dr. Kosnett?
Yeah.
Is there any requirement for the grounding for both the input port and output port?
No.
Or just like a floating or grounded together or with some potential difference?
Yeah, all whatever you like. It can be isolated, it can be non-isolated. Anything you like is fine there.
Okay, so just a 12-volt port.
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
In terms of going through and prototyping, if you want to test this, everybody in this class is a current GRA, so should all have access, but if you need any help there, I can get you access to various labs. But, if you want to do something crazy with grounding, you'll want to think first about whether you have the equipment in-house to measure that available. Because if you are using a grounded source and a grounded electronic load, it's going to short your grounds together through some high impedance path regardless. So I'd say think practically about that, but there are no requirements there.
I see. Thank you.
Okay.
Dr. Kostanet?
Yeah, Dennis.
So about, you mentioned, working alone and stuff. How does that play together with the rules from the past about having to work with someone else for safety?
So everything here is below 48 volts, so there is no shock hazard, we'll still have the general requirements of that working in, for example, the first floor labs shouldn't be working in there alone. Those are requirements for those facilities, not for what you're doing in there. So that'll be lab by lab on where you plan to do your testing, but those safety requirements that you've all done your safety training on are always in place for those facilities.
Does that also apply for the second floor lab?
It will. Yeah, second floor lab. Okay. You can talk to me about getting access to, but those same safety requirements will be in place. So what's going to mean, as in the first floor lab, you would need to have two people in there socially distanced so that you are at opposite corners of the lab.
Okay. So, but the rules are for the lab and not for the project itself, right?
Yeah. All the safety rules are governed by the actual room you're in, right? It's what equipment is in that room, not what you're doing in there. So,
okay.
First floor labs, the buddy system's in effect if you're there working on a computer or writing a report.
Okay, and then about the separate grounds, about what Zihan said, I was thinking, I guess we assume that every piece of equipment, even if it's nominally isolated, still has capacitive coupling to ground?
Yeah, I mean, everything has capacitance to everything. There's a law of the universe there.
Okay. Dr. Kosnit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Will the controller be provided or just choose everything we want?
Yeah. I will provide it. I'll talk about that in another slide or two here.
Okay.
So let me go on and then we'll have more time for questions here. So first, just on this first deliverable that everyone does have to do by end of the month, October 30th. It's a design comparison report. You're expected to select at least three topologies and do just a paper design of them that goes through looking at, okay, what power devices would you select? What gate driver would you use? What's your switching frequency? And what's the implementation of your passives? And got a couple weeks, should put some thought into it. This does not require, hey, I ran this optimization for it. It can be, I just designed the things that seemed like reasonable points and comment on maybe how it could be improved. Doesn't require selecting the optimal power device, but requires good design decisions. Okay? Turn in one and say at 36 watts, the loss is 80 watts. That's not a good design. What do you say? Losses are 1 watt. I think if I kept tweaking switching frequency, I could get a little bit lower, but I'm not doing that right now. That'll be for the final design. That's okay. So you want to look at comparing these three designs based on the metrics that we're trying to meet for this converter. And then I'm constraining a little bit what these three topologies are. And this is all just stuff made up for this class. This is not general nomenclature. What I'm calling class one topologies, any sort of two switch PWM, buck boost, Chuuk's epic, all these things. Class two, isolated variants of those, flyback, forward converter. Class three are AC link topologies, like we've been talking about in the last few lectures. And class four are things that don't conform to the rest of this. Right? And so among your three topologies, a couple of constraints, you need to have at least one AC link type topology, a dual active bridge, dual active half bridge, SRC, LLC, so on. And at least one that is not in any of these three classes, and that's generally gonna mean is not something we've covered in lecture. It'll require you to go find some paper, find some topology from a reference and consider that one as well, right? Then the third one can be whatever you want, with one caveat here. you may not use just the hard switch buck converter or buck boost converter. You want to get zero voltage switching on it, fine. But just a hard switch buck can't be one of your options. Should be a little bit more design effort than that. Okay. Does that make sense? One thing here, one thing you got to go out and find in the literature, and the third, whatever you like. And the last thing, back to,
just quick question. Are hard switch variants of topologies from class 2 to class 4 allowed?
Allowed but discouraged.
Okay.
So yeah, trying not to limit you from doing a good design, but at the same time, I would like to see theory from the class applied.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And last thing, and this relates to Jihan's question, so to try to bootstrap things a bit and minimize the amount of additional work here, what I will provide are FPGA, PWM power supply and isolation board, and reference code for how to use this. And this is just a controller and some gate driver signal generators that can generate up to 4 low side and 4 high side gate drive signals with arbitrary duty cycle phase shift frequency. Okay. You still need a gate driver on your board, but this will generate the logic level signals for it without having to go and learn some microprocessor or FPGA or do all of the additional hardware to get a high side gate drive signal if you have something with a phase leg in it. So these are available. What's got is these connectors that can go to your board, the layout and layout of a mating connector to this board will be posted on the website. These 4 outputs, as is each of these little banks of 4 pins, has a ground, a PWM signal, 15 volts, and then an adjustable voltage with a just configurable LDO. These 4 are all grounded together. These 4 up here all have isolated separate grounds. So these 4 would all share, be 4 devices that share a common source. These could be 4 devices with floating sources. Okay. If you need more than that, you'll have to add some circuitry on your own board that can be outside of the bounds of your competition area / volume. These should be pretty easy to use. The reference code just sets each of these channels up as some whatever frequency you say, some duty cycle, and some phase shift. Shift things around to generate whatever series of steady state PWM waveforms you want. Again, no sensing, no control required. You can, in testing these 4 powers, bring the converter on, test at full power, then shut it off, reprogram the FPGA for a different set of PWM waveforms, turn it back on and go to that operating point and test it. You don't need to go through all of these continuously, solely steady state. Okay, and this is, I think, my last slide before we get into course content. Here's the schedule from next week through the end of the semester. So the design comparison report is due here. PCB layout is due November 13th, 2 weeks later. If you want to go through with prototyping, that's a complete PCB layout. If you don't, that's just blocks of here's my FETs and passives, and here's what the volume would have been, not routed. and final exam period down here in blue. Final exam will be due at the end of that. Final exam will be given out on, we spoke, December 2nd. There you'll either be taking the written final exam based on your choice, or sometime hopefully here on November 20th, but maybe November 23rd, be getting back a PCB and doing testing. Then we've got a midterm exam, which is the other thing to discuss. I'm going to propose, based on these other due dates, that we do the midterm exam next week. That would require me to likely get all grades for homeworks posted tonight so that you have Friday and the weekend to ask me any questions there. Then I would give out a midterm exam on Monday. It would be due on Friday, and there would be no homework next week. The written 2 to 3 problems, roughly comparable to homework problems, and it'll replace the homework for that week. Okay. So that's my proposal for the competition and exams. Any additional feedback? Or dissenting opinions?
Sounds good.
No. Normally, yes, but you have the midterm and design comparison report. I can do no homework this week as well. There will be additional homeworks in the remainder of the course. So this design competition is going to be running in the background while we're still lecturing on new topics and having homeworks in general. But we are almost done with sinusoidal analysis, and I can shift some topics around, so it's reasonable to have no homework due on October 30th other than the design comparison report.
Out of curiosity, will we have homework after the 20th? Because we still have class on the 23rd, I wasn't sure if we still have homework based on
what we are. Not sure. It depends on when we get there, but the only things I would see as reasonable would be taking the homework that would have been due here and pushing it to here. You won't have a homework due on the 20th and then a homework due on the 23rd or after the 23rd. Yeah. After here, there will be nothing except whatever option for final exam you choose. Any other questions? Comments?
Maybe a weird question. I'm not sure if you're able to do this, but do you have like an example of like formatted report that you've received in the past for maybe one of the devices that we're unable to submit that we could kind of reference and see like what kind of format you want with it?
What do you mean by one of the devices that we're unable to submit?
Like, for instance, maybe like a hard switching buck boost or something like that, that you specifically said that you would prefer for us not to use.
Yeah. Well, so let me say this. This thing is, I'm calling it a design comparison report, but it's not a report in the homeworky class deliverable sense. This can be written up like a one of your normal homework problems. It can be just, here's the calculations, here's what I got, here's my selection. There's no narrative requirement on that. Maybe a sentence at the end commenting on, I think this could be done better, but it doesn't have to be introduction, methods. There's not a writing requirement. It doesn't have to be typed up. It can just be written, right?
Yes, you would have definitely gotten like a 10-page write-up from me.
So I would like maybe a sentence or two commenting just to make clear what you did and what you think can be improved, but it's not a full document. Then the final report, if you choose the competition option for your final exam, again, is that I do have a fixed format that I'll post to the website, but it is not a report either. It is put an O-scope waveform of the major states of the converter in steady state at full power here, fill out this table of testing results, comment on any issues, but that should be a quarter of a page paragraph. Okay? That's mostly there if, okay, it didn't meet some of the specifications. I want you to think about why and what needs to be fixed for it to have met those. But none of this has any significant writing in terms of text narrative involved. PCB layout due is getting me the PCB files. There is no other writing involved there. I will post shortly after class to the website all the information from these slides separately as a web page, as well as a longer document with all the details of, okay, where are we submitting for PCB layout? What are the limitations of that? What exactly do I want in here? And in this final report, it'll be spelled out in a little bit greater detail.
Thank you.
Even though these designs are supposed to be individual, is collaboration between us encouraged, discouraged?
You should be doing your own work. You're certainly welcome to talk to each other. But I would expect to see different designs
yes.
among everyone.
Oh, yeah. I was meaning
it is. Would be a problem if I got two reports that had the same three topologies selected and the same switching frequency, passive values, everything fits for all of them. But you're absolutely welcome to talk to each other about what sorts of things you're looking into and considering. Other questions? Comments?
Could we use external airflow to cool down the converter, or just natural convection?
You can use whatever you like. There are no constraints or requirements on thermal.
Okay.
And then there does have to be about a watt of loss at full power. A little more than a watt, shouldn't be a significant constraint. 95% is a little bit lax, but yeah, I'm not requiring anything on thermal. You can do whatever you like there.
Fine. Okay, I see. Thank you.
Anything else, anybody? Okay. Seem fair enough? Reasonable, despite our current situation in the world? Okay. Yes. Then let's cover a little bit, continuing on, of course, content here. So last time we finished this complete equivalent circuit for our sinusoidal or fundamental harmonic analysis. Through and looked just generally at some of the behaviors of these AC link topologies as predicted from this sinusoidal analysis. And then started talking about, okay, since the conversion ratio depends entirely on this transfer function HFS of the tank, and the dominant characteristics of the converter are going to come from things like Z in, Z out, and this transfer function. What do those things look like? And use SRC as an example. And today we're going to go a little bit further and start talking about what sorts of behaviors we can infer of the converter from these quantities. Okay, so I'm going to start again with this SRC example that we solved last time. And I'm going to look at the input impedance and the transfer function, which was just RE over ZN. And I'm going to plot just the magnitude plots of both of those over here versus log frequency axes, my Bode plots. Okay. So plotting these just graphically, we've got three elements in Zn, got some inductor. The magnitude asymptote of an inductor should look like 20 dBs per decade going up. Somewhere left, right, up, down on this plot determined by the magnitude of LL. 1 over SCR, gonna be minus 20 dB per decade slope going down. And exactly where these are determined by my design of the converter. LL and CR are my passives, so I'll have design for this SRC. And then RE is my equivalent loading of the converter. It's the load resistance as kind of seen on the other side of this diode bridge. So that'll depend on my operating point, and it'll vary and be anything really between zero and infinity, right? So let's say first, maybe RE is somewhere here. Okay. So I combine these together. My net input impedance is going to look like this. At this value of RE. But again, RE can change depending on the loading condition. What is the output power? So if RE was a little bit higher, I would get some other curve. It looks like this. If RE was a little bit higher, I would get some other curve that looks like this. And as RE gets really large, get some curve way up here. Eventually that resistive asymptote is going to dominate everything. Okay. When I look at H of S, it is RE over ZN. The magnitude of H of S is then going to be the magnitude of RE minus the magnitude of ZN on log axes. So it's going to look like here, where my input impedance is always just magnitude RE, I'm going to end up hitting 0 dB. Or this is going to be equal to 1, then everywhere else it's going to look like Zn in the denominator, which on a log scale makes it negative. For example, this first curve we drew looks something like this. Second curve would look something like this. Third curve look like this. Okay. So as I go through these, this direction on these curves is RE increasing. And here is RE increasing. Okay. So if we're looking at picking a switching frequency, which we want to operate in the series resonant converter, we can examine along this log frequency axis and look at, okay, what would be the characteristics of a converter that, for example, had this switching frequency slightly above the resonant frequency. Got F naught here. Let's say I put FS here. Then as the load varies, if I keep that constant switching frequency, these points would tell me how the input impedance and transfer function of the converter change for varying values of RE. It's kind of two different regions here, depending on whether we're to the left or to the right of the resonance, where we'll get different behaviors for varying load. Okay. So we'll start over here to the right of F naught, be my F is greater than one, FS greater than F naught. And what sort of characteristics can we glean from this? First, when we look at the input impedance, Zn is roughly inductive. Okay, so everything is kind of sloping up as we go to higher frequency. We're close to this resonant point, but we're more dominantly inductive than capacitive, which means ZVS is possible. So we go to higher values of RE, our impedance here becomes more resistive, which means likely as we go to higher values of RE, it's going to be harder to actually obtain ZVS. We might not have enough energy, enough current available to get it within a dead time, but ZVS is generally possible. Here on the left, the counter case for F is less than one, you're looking more capacitive. So ZVS is explicitly not possible. And we're going to be hard switching the output capacitance of our inverter. Okay. The load resistance seen by the inverter looks capacitive, so current's going to lead voltage and we'll not have a chance at ZVS. Okay. We haven't discussed it at length, but ZCS is possible, be zero current switching. Zero current switching is advantageous for things like reverse recovery or IGBT tail current. We drop the current to zero before it shuts off. That way we can eliminate some of those loss mechanisms. In the past, that's been real important for very high power converters that we're building with IGBTs, where those current tailing losses can be way more significant than their output capacitance loss. We prefer ZCS over ZVS. Today, with silicon carbide MOSFETs and Schottky, silicon carbide Schottky diodes, more often than not, even in high power applications, we're looking at designing towards majority carrier devices, and majority carrier devices like ZVS more than ZCS, except in very extreme conditions. So this still could be a viable operating region. Over here, F less than one, where we have capacitive switching. What it would mean though is that the COSS type losses of this converter are way smaller than the just turn off losses due to high currents going through it. Be very specific designs where that's the case. Okay. So what we can kind of glean from Zn, the other thing that we often look at in these converters is as RE increases, what does the input impedance do? And what I would like is what I have in the SRC. As RE increases, Zn increases. And if this converter is voltage source converter, then as the load resistance gets bigger, the output power is going down, right? Keep an output voltage, load resistance increases, it has smaller current, it should be lower power going through the output. Okay. And we would like, as the power decreases, for the amount of current coming out of the inverter to decrease. Okay. This is going to mean that, kind of just saying this differently, as P out goes down, P conduction in the inverter goes down. Okay. This is the case for most of the simple two-switch PWM topologies, but as we start getting into these AC link topologies, as we look at some of the other tanks, find that sometimes this is not true. as the output power drops, what's happening is the tank is phase shifting with respect to the inverter, and we're getting very high currents, but they're out of phase with respect to the voltage, so there's no real power in them. We just have really high circulating currents and a lot of conduction losses. So this here is a good thing. It's also true over on the left. As RE increases, ZN increases, and that's a good thing. We'll find some ranges in other tanks where the opposite is true. As the output power decreases, the conduction losses go up. So you're gonna have a hard time getting reasonable efficiency out of that. You know, very high conduction losses at the lightest of loading conditions. So the things we kind of look at, ZVS or ZCS, switching conditions, performance at light load. One other potential issue of this series resonant converter occurs really at one point is if my RE goes to zero, I short circuit the output, this curve would go down to minus infinity dB. And so operating at a switching frequency near the resonant frequency, if the output is short-circuited, the inverter is short-circuited. The input impedance of the tank also goes to zero minus infinity dB. It means the inverter will get excessively high currents. Some other topologies will have some robustness to that. If the output is short-circuited, the inverter still sees a finite impedance, meaning it's robust to short-circuit, it can operate and be fine. This SRC, if you're operating particularly close to the resonant frequency, the output is shorted, the inverter will blow up without protection of some kind, right? It'll get short-circuited and develop infinite current. Okay. So at F is equal to 1, RE goes to 0, then ZN goes to 0. So the converter cannot tolerate a short circuit. Anywhere else, if I'm operating where I showed with this red line, the switching frequency, if I short the output, the impedance is dropping, but it'll never get all the way down to zero. I'll have some minimum impedance, even if I short the load. And then for some maximum current coming out of the inverter, even with the load being shorted, which is a useful feature to have for protection. So this just, as that same, this is still the SRC converter plotting magnitude of input impedance in this transfer function. In this case, this is not log scale. It's linear scale between 0 and 1, looking at a conversion ratio that maybe is a little more useful than a log scale. So SRC, kind of depending on the load resistance, generally, we're going to design up here where we can get ZVS. And for varying frequencies, our conversion ratio of the SRC goes between 1 and 0. Very sharply for small load resistances, very smoothly for high values of load resistance. So is the conversion ratio considering just this LC tank? I can put a transformer in there, and then this will all be the conversion ratio divided by N, right? I can use that turns ratio to make one actually be step up or step down. It's all just relative to that turns ratio, but fundamentally step down type, ignoring the turns ratio of the transformer. Then we'll go through and look at a few other options. First is this parallel resonant converter. So again, a full bridge here. For the inverter, full bridge diode rectifier. Parallel polarizing converter can be implemented in a few different ways, but in this one we're using in this current driven rectifier we mentioned in the previous lecture. So I've got some big filter element at the output so that I'll have a square wave of current. And this will be ILF, is approximately DC. Then IR here would be a square wave current, and we would derive the behavior of this rectifier network kind of as the dual of what we did with our voltage loaded rectifier. It's still going to result in being some equivalent impedance RE. The expression for that may be different, but this ideal diode rectifier is always going to keep voltage and current perfectly in phase. So it'll still be some resistive loading. We'll call it RE star. Expression there is different, but in a straightforward manner, that'll make sense. Then main thing, what this is named after is this parallel resonant tank. It's kind of oddly named because you might think, oh, parallel resonance, it should be this. But we call this thing the parallel resonant converter, where it's got a series inductor and then shunt capacitor. So we're out of time, so we'll look at the characteristics of this parallel resonant converter and then a couple others, LCC, then LLC tanks, a few other common ones. And then that'll be more or less the end of our sinusoidal analysis discussion in the course. Okay. So we'll pick up there on Friday. I'll post TinyBox stuff to the website later today, and then hope to have all of your grades posted by this evening. Thanks, everyone.